All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are going to be talking about a lot of nuggets dropped by ESPN's Vaughn McClure today. We're going to be talking about the Grady Jarrett contract talk, who the Falcons have strong interest in the first round, a possible free agent guard, a possible running back trade, and two Falcon players retiring. All of that today on Locked On Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, I am the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we are sort of reacting, instant reaction to sort of Vaughn McClure of ESPN basically dropping like a 6,000 word essay. No, but basically Vaughn basically just dumped all the stuff that he had been hearing about the Falcons and various things from the combine weekend on Monday morning or Monday afternoon. And there's a lot of interesting things in there, a variety of topics in there that we want to discuss. And we'll start out talking about Grady Jarrett. That came a couple of hours before it was official that the Falcons did put the franchise tag, the non-exclusive franchise tag, on Grady Jarrett Monday afternoon, about 24 hours, a little less than 24 hours before the Tuesday deadline. And so he will be franchise tagged. And, you know, the non-exclusive tag means that it's possible that he could sign with another team. But I don't, when was the last time a player, I want to say it was Sean Gilbert, like in 1999. Like, no one signs franchise tag players. So it's not going to happen. But, yeah, you know, there's a 0.0001% chance that maybe someone could sign him and give the Falcons two first-round picks. So if you're inclined to want to believe in fairy tales like that, then by all means, believe that that is a possibility. But, you know, what's interesting is sort of Vaughn also sort of commented on how far apart the Falcons and Grady Jarrett are on their negotiations. Basically, Vaughn said, I think they're quote unquote a long ways away. He also mentioned that NFL executives that were in Indianapolis over the weekend for the combine were saying that Grady Jarrett does want Aaron Donald money, and Vaughn made a note to say that that is not coming from Grady Jarrett's camp. And we talked about that on yesterday's episode, where I sort of gave my assessment of the whole Grady Jarrett and the Falcons aren't close and the rift and the impasse and all the things that you want to say between the two sides. I don't necessarily buy the whole he wants Aaron Donald money, because as I outlined on Monday's episode, and I recommend you guys go and check that out, the first 10 minutes of that episode where I sort of go into further detail, but I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. I outlined like three different contracts that Grady Jarrett and or the Falcons could want to use as the template for his contract. And at the bottom is the Kawan Short deal. In the middle is the Fletcher Cox deal. And at the top is the Aaron Donald deal. And I learned today from Joe Corey of CBS Sports that Grady Jarrett's agent is the same as Fletcher Cox's agent. So it leads credence to at least my theory, or at least I will choose to believe it leads credence to my theory. But I should also note that in that exchange, Joe Corey, who is a former agent who does a lot of these contract and stuff negotiations for CBS, indicated that he doubts that Grady Jarrett is asking for Aaron Donald money. But basically, in that, those three contracts is, and basically what I said on yesterday's episode was that the guaranteed money is likely the hang up. And I think there's such a wide disparity between those contracts. Basically, it's like a $20 million difference in terms of guaranteed money. Short got $45 million guaranteed. Cox got $63 million guaranteed. And Aaron Donald got $87 million guaranteed. And for pretty much each of those contracts, it's about a $20 million gulf. And that, to me, is certainly representative of what I think is sort of the rift between the team. I imagine, again, in my sort of speculation, that the Falcons are trying to get him at a Kawan Short type of money, which is that $45, maybe $50 million guaranteed. And Grady Jarrett, and again, in light of information that he's also represented by the same agent who represents Fletcher Cox, is probably looking for money north of Fletcher Cox, which is in $63 million, maybe $65 million or something along those lines. And so that's, $15, $20 million difference. in terms of asking price, in terms of guarantees, and that's enough to cause a rift. That's enough to cause a little bit of an impasse. That's enough to say they're far apart or they're a long ways away if you have to basically, you know, bridge the gap between $20 million or so. So that's why I don't really buy the whole Aaron Donald thing, because I can't imagine Grady Jarrett going and being like, no, I want, you know, $90 million guaranteed or $80 million guaranteed. And it's like, no, my guy, like, you know, like, I can't imagine a situation where the Falcons would offer him, you know, $65 million guaranteed on a contract that pays him, you know, $90 million over 5 years. And Grady Jarrett like, no, I need $120 million over 5 years. And I need like 80 or 90 of that to be guaranteed. I can't buy that at all. So I think for a lot of people, you know, that whole Aaron Donald rumor gets a lot of traction because it sort of tickles the fear parts of people's brains. And certainly I think part of the thing that's contributing to this, this sort of panic that I'm seeing from various people where they're like, oh, if he's asking for Aaron Donald money, he's not worth it. That people immediately go to sort of this dark place of like, let's get rid of Grady Jarrett because of this rumor I've heard, that the person who perpetuated the rumor, no offense to Dave Archer, immediately retracted the rumor. And then basically, you know, people that aren't involved in a negotiation now are sort of reportedly saying like, oh, well, he does want Aaron Donald money, but nobody sort of that's connected to the negotiation, and nobody that actually covers the Falcons is coming out and saying that that's what it is. So, you know, for me, I think a lot of it is due to the fact that the Falcons haven't had to deal with a franchise player in 7 years since Brent Grimes was tagged in 2012. And so I think it's not particularly common. People, I don't think, Falcon fans at least, I don't think know how to handle this sort of situation. The way that it usually goes elsewhere in the league is that basically you get tagged in March, nothing happens for a couple of months. And then in June and July, about a month before the July 15th deadline, a lot of activity picks up for these franchise tag guys. Sometimes they get deals done. Sometimes they don't. I think the Falcons will get a deal done. As I said on yesterday's episode, I think I said 85% confident that it will happen. You know, that was down from a previous 95%, but still 85% confident that he'll get a deal done. And if it doesn't happen, then we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But I think people sort of panicking in March, I think, is a little bit premature. Let's wait till at least July, like we did with the Julio situation last year, before we start, you know, screaming in the streets and setting things on fire and rioting and all these various things that people want to do. So I would say I would recommend pump the brakes. I would recommend, if you know somebody who's panicking, I would recommend you throwing a drink in their face of ice cold water to sort of snap them out of it. Slap them in the face if need be. Do whatever you got to do, but, you know, don't have a cow man, as the great Bart Simpson would say. So we'll come back in just a little bit and talk about the Falcons draft plans as well as free agent plans that may involve them upgrading their offensive line play in just a moment. But I do want to let you guys know that you guys should check out the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast hosted by Brad Rowland. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. So the other nugget that Von McClure dropped in that 6,000-word essay was that the Falcons have reportedly strong interest in Oklahoma offensive lineman Cody Ford, who's considered to be a possibility in the first round. He also mentioned that the Falcons, there's whispers that the Falcons will be targeting a free agent like Kevin Pamphiel, formerly of the Tennessee Titans, but also prior to that played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he played and started under Dirk Cutter in 2016 and 2017 at the left guard position. Let's talk Cody Ford first. You know, I don't have a lot to say about Cody Ford at this point because I do want to watch a little bit more of him. I like him. I think he's sort of a late first round guy as an offensive tackle. I know a lot of people sort of see him as a guard. I understand if you run a power scheme, why you would see him as a guard, because I think that does make sense within that scheme. I think in our outside zone blocking scheme, he would be a pretty terrible fit as a guard. Like, it's not to sit here and say that you couldn't play him in that spot, but I don't think you would come away being like, oh yeah, this is the best use of Cody Ford. Like, if the Falcons drafted Cody Ford, and we'll circle back to sort of their what's going on with their right tackle when we get to Kevin Pamphile. But if the Falcons drafted him and then were like, well, we already have our right tackle situation solved with Ty Sambrello / Ryan Schrader. Let's have Ford compete at the guard spot and see what he can do there to get him some opportunities immediately on the line. And again, as I've mentioned in previous episodes, the fact that Brandon Fusco probably is going to miss a sizable chunk of the OTAs means that someone's going to have to get first team reps at that right guard position. And, you know, why not Cody Ford if he was the Falcons' first round draft pick? But it's not to say that I don't think he could play that spot, but I just think he just does not fit the scheme because so much of this guard position, and we saw this reflected last year, we've seen this in other seasons, where, you know, it's a critical part of being a guard in this outside zone blocking scheme is to be able to make second level blocks, is to be able to locate and basically be that heat seeking missile taking out linebackers on the second level. And if you can't do that, and we saw this with Brandon Fusco this past season, I would make a very compelling argument that it was a significant contributor to why the Falcons couldn't run the football in the first half of the season. Then they put Ben Garland in the lineup, and all of a sudden the Falcons could start running the football. I don't think that's something that Cody Ford does well. I think he moves well for a guy his size at 330 pounds, but I don't think he's really a good guy that's comfortable blocking in space like you would want from the guard. I think he's more suited for the offensive tackle position, which is they ask the right tackle and the left tackle to block downfield from time to time, but it isn't necessarily, you know, the critical or key component of what they're asked to do. And I like Cody Ford. I don't necessarily look at him right now as saying like, oh, this guy would be a great 14th overall pick. I think right now I would probably have a grade on him that's something like a late first, early second round guy, but that's kind of the same grade I had on Keanu Neal. And we took him at pick 17 and that worked out fine. So I don't want to make it sound like, you know, oh, I don't have this high grade on Cody Ford and therefore it's a bad pick. No, it wouldn't probably be my preferred pick if I was taking an offensive tackle because I like Jonah Williams. I like Jawan Taylor a little bit better at that spot. But, you know, if the Falcons took Cody Ford, wouldn't have a problem with it whatsoever. I think he's a solid player. And, you know, I'm never going to complain about the Falcons investing in their offensive line, as you guys well know. So let's talk about Kevin Pamphile. You know, the other thing that Yvonne mentioned is that Ryan Schrader's status is in limbo and that NFL executives called Ty Sambrello a backup at best. So that's something that me and NFL executives can agree on, that Ty Sambrello is a backup at best. You know, we'll talk a little about Pamphile. I don't have too much specific memories of him when he was in Tampa Bay. My memories of it were vaguely that he wasn't very good. But I can't necessarily tell you like what he's good at or anything. I don't have that sort of locked away in my brain. The one thing you will say about him is he's versatile. He wound up playing 4 out of 5 positions during the course of his NFL career, left tackle, left guard, right guard, and right tackle. So he would definitely be a valuable backup as a starter. I would be skeptical of that, but again, you know, probably one of the things I'll do in the next week is, or this week, before free agency kicks off next week, is go on NFL Game Pass and try to watch some of what he was in Tampa Bay and sort of briefly in Tennessee. He got hurt this year, so wound up on IR. But yeah, I think right now he's probably a utility guy that can compete for a spot, but not necessarily a guy that you would sign, hopefully, with the intention of handing over a starting spot for him. The whole Schrader's status being in limbo thing is an odd thing. You know, certainly if you listen to this podcast late in the season and follow me on Twitter late in the season, you heard me say things like I'd be open and some at times advocate for Schrader to return at the right tackle position. But certainly now that we live in a post Ty Sambrello contract world, you know, these, you know, there's, the assassination of Franz Ferdinand, there's Germany invading Poland, and then there's the Falcons signing Ty Sambrello to their contract as the three seminal events of the last 105 years. But, you know, in this post-Ty Sambrello contract world, it doesn't make any sense for the Falcons to bring back Ryan Schrader. Like, if you're bringing him back to compete, like, at the salary he's making, you're not bringing him back to compete. You're basically saying, if you're bringing him back, you're basically, he's the starter. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to bring him back to compete. So, you know, that doesn't make any sense to me. And then when you factor in that the Falcons gave Ty Sambrello a significant raise, and now he's, like, if he's only going to be the backup to Ryan Schrader, then he's, like, the highest paid swing tackle in the league. You know, not by a huge degree, but certainly more than what your average team is paying swing tackles. And it just, it doesn't make any sense. So, I've long suspected that Ryan Schrader was going to be a post-June 1 cut for the last couple of months. You know, alongside of the Falcons are keeping Vic Beasley, Ryan Schrader is going to be a post-June 1 cut. And now sort of the last week or so has sort of thrown that out of whack because various reports are like, oh, the Falcons plan on keeping Ryan Schrader. And I'm just like, what? Like, again, I like Ryan Schrader. You guys know I think his falling off of a cliff was due to an injury. But as I've said a number of times on various Q&As, given his age and whatnot, there's no guarantee that he's good. Just basically, you just give him, you know, an offseason and he'll be fully healthy and revert back to his 2017, 2016 self. I mean, he already was technically declining in 2017. His run blocking was not as good as it had been in previous years. And so, I mean, like, thinking that, assuming, let me say, like, he could bounce back, but assuming that he's going to bounce back, I think is pretty poor assumption. So I'm fine with the Falcons moving on from Ryan Schrader. I would love to see the Falcons, if they're going to move on from Ryan Schrader, go out and draft a guy like a Cody Ford or any of the other top offensive tackles. But yeah, so the fact that we still don't know what was going on with Ryan Schrader is odd to me, particularly, again, in this post Ty Sambrello contract world. But that being said, let's wrap things up by talking about the possibility of the Falcons trading for a running back. Some guys retiring, as well as maybe two of what Von McClure thinks the Falcons' middle-round picks will be used on at two specific positions. But before we get there, I do want to let you guys know that if we're talking about who the Falcons should be drafting in the middle rounds, spoiler alert, you guys should check out the two draft podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. The first is the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema, followed by the Draft Dudes Podcast with hosts Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs. Find them both wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, as well as get those guys' content, particularly their combine-related content, at thedraftnetwork.com, your team every day. So let's talk about the Duke Johnson trade. This was probably the nugget that Vaughn dropped in this huge document, this thesis, that was so, like, sort of out of left field. Like, he said there's a long shot the Falcons might look at trading for Cleveland Browns running back Duke Johnson as a replacement for Tevin Coleman. You know, my thought process is like a definite long shot, because it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I won't say it doesn't make sense from the Falcons' perspective. I just think that the odds of the Falcons trading for Duke Johnson are, like, extremely low. And part of that is due to, I don't think the Browns are going to be eager to trade Duke Johnson, as many people have opined since they signed Kareem Hunt. I think a lot of people were like, oh, they're going to get rid of Duke Johnson or Nick Chubb because they signed Kareem Hunt. But basically, Kareem Hunt is like a, you can question whether it's a low or high risk, but from a financial standpoint, it's a low risk, potentially high reward sort of signing. And after this season, he's going to be a restricted free agent, so they're going to still have his rights after this season. They just gave Duke Johnson a contract extension last offseason. They just drafted Nick Chubb. And the main thing is Kareem Hunt's going to get suspended this year. Now, we don't know what it's going to be, but at least the initial reports after he got cut by the Chiefs was that it's not going to be sort of the 6-game minimum that players that have the domestic violence and personal conduct stuff that Kareem Hunt had during the season get. It's going to be more than that. So, you know, whether that's 8 games or 12 games or an entire season, I have no idea. And I'm not going to sit here and speculate. But it means to me that basically the Browns can't really count on Kareem Hunt for only if they can only for a portion of this upcoming season. So Duke Johnson is their main third down running back. And of course, you guys know this is a passing league. And so, you know, at least for half the season, you would assume that Duke Johnson is going to be their guy. So I think the only way that the Browns really trade Duke Johnson is if they're blown away by a trade offer, which I, at this point, again, purely speculating on my part, would probably be like a day two pick, a second or third round pick, which I think there's like a 0% chance that the Falcons would trade a day two pick for a what is essentially a backup running back. You know, I think Duke Johnson is an excellent player. And you can argue is a better version of what Tevin Coleman was. But like, I just don't see that happening. So to me, what's more interesting about this nugget is that whether the Falcons are serious about acquiring a player like Duke Johnson, the fact that they are allegedly interested in him suggests, implies, hints that maybe the Falcons see their backup running back depth as a bigger need than certainly I have argued in the past it is. As you guys may recall, I've basically said that if I was running the Falcons front office, I would just punt running back until next season and see what Ito Smith and see what Brian Hill has and see whether Devontae Freeman can bounce back. If it's true that the Falcons are sort of seriously sort of sniffing around the guy like Duke Johnson, it suggests that they sort of see they're not as maybe high on Ito Smith's ability to step into Tevin Coleman's shoes as I am. Maybe they're not as high on Brian Hill being a potential option in sort of a committee system. And they're probably more likely not as sort of optimistic that Devontae Freeman is going to bounce back and be the pre-injury Devontae Freeman and be the guy that can, you know, touch the ball 200, 250 times this year as he had done in previous seasons. So that to me is interesting. That's something that we'll keep our eyes on as we move forward. You know, again, I would be shocked if the Falcons went out and signed a veteran or went out and traded for a veteran like a Duke Johnson. But it does maybe indicate that maybe the Falcons would be a little bit more willing to use a, let's say, middle round pick, like a fourth round pick on a running back than I think a lot of us might assume. But speaking of middle round picks, let's talk about the other thing that Von McClure talked about, which is he mentioned specifically that the Falcons were looking to upgrade their return specialist at blocking tight end. He mentioned sort of the compensatory picks that the Falcons got in the fourth and fifth round at the end of those two rounds as potential options, potential targets to sort of address those needs. And that sounds about right. When I've been sort of looking at some of the running backs and wide receivers and corners in this draft class as potential options for the Falcons on day three and at least with cornerback a little bit earlier, but running backs and wide receivers, I have been primarily focused on guys that have return skills and return experience, because while I wouldn't necessarily expend draft picks on a guy to return to be a factor in a return game, and I've explained this before because I just think the way that the league's rules are now that, you know, expending assets on guys, a roster spot specifically for a return specialist is kind of a waste of assets. But if you have a guy on your team that can contribute in other ways, which, you know, at running back, you can argue Ito Smith can return kicks because that's what he did in college. At wide receiver, you have Marvin Hall who can return kicks and punts. The Falcons tried that with Justin Hardy to not much success. Cornerback, you have Isaiah Oliver who could punt return, did that in college, probably won't this year. But, you know, you could have a guy that's a fourth corner that could be a gunner on punt team and also return kicks or whatnot. So, it, you know, it makes a little bit more sense if those guys are going to have also roles that will allow them to be active on game day, regardless of whether or not they're going to win the return spot. So I get that. And with the blocking tight end, it makes a sense that the Falcons are looking to upgrade that spot. It's a deep tight end class. I haven't really studied it extensively. I've seen some of the top guys, a little bit of, you know, maybe the top six or seven guys, but I need to watch more. But it's notable that, you know, Von McClure made the instance of specifying a blocking tight end, which also sort of suggests that Logan Paulson probably won't be returning, which in light of sort of the Falcons penny pinching seemed like a relatively one of the more expendable guys that probably a month ago, I would have said, yeah, Logan Paulson is I wouldn't say definitely, but very likely to return, to be re-signed. But maybe he's one of those guys that they lose by the wayside. So it'll be interesting to sort of see who the Falcons target, just because this draft class, from what I've seen, has a lot of solid receiving tight ends. You know, if you're looking for more of a guy that can be an inline blocker, typically you can wait till the fourth, fifth round to take one of those guys and take, you know, a Will Disley type. I don't remember what round the Seahawks took Will Disley. I want to say it was like the fourth round, but somebody like that. Who that player is in this year's class, I have no idea. The last little thing is just sort of a interesting little nugget for Vaughn to add at the end of his thing, where he basically said that don't be surprised if two Falcon players retire, which I'm sure people are like, what? Who could he possibly hinting at? We'll see. I have some candidates. I would Andy LaVitre to me is probably the prime candidate to be one of those two guys. Who the other one is, it could be anybody's guess. It could be Logan Paulson. He's, you know, he's 32. Zane Beatles is 32. Derek Shelby is 30 and coming off another season-ending injury. You have John Kondo, who's like 102. I think he was around when Franz Ferdinand got assassinated in 1914. So, you know, those are probably the prime candidates. I would be surprised if it's anybody else, but, you know, it's we'll sort of see where Vaughn goes with that in the future. So there you have it, guys. A very Vaughn McClure, you know, takes on takes, as my friends at the Draft Dudes podcast would say. Vaughn had some takes, and I have some takes on those takes. So that's today's episode. Hopefully we'll be able to get a guest on later this week to talk a little bit about the Combine, but it does seem like things are picking up a little bit with the Falcons, and so we'll have some content for you. We're only, I think, as you guys are listening to this, the tampering period starts in 6 days, and then free agency officially kicks off in 8 days on the 13th. So, you know, I don't expect the Falcons to be active. I know there's going to be a lot of names that get cut between now and then. People are going, oh, the Falcons should sign that guy, and they're probably not going to do it. But, you know, hope springs eternal. So, you know, keep hope alive, guys, as the Reverend Jesse would say. But yeah, I don't think I just keep your expectations low. That's all I'm sitting here saying. So we'll see what the Falcons do in the coming days. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for this podcast and for future Q&A episodes that we may do at the end of this week, you can of course can send them in to the show's Twitter handle or Facebook page, both of which are under the name Locked On Falcons. You can also send an email at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com, or you can leave a comment at falcfans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. I will try to get that leftover mailbag that I did not get to this weekend. I just basically procrastinated. That's my biggest vice, besides giving scorching hot Falcons takes. It's procrastinating on various articles and whatnot that I should be writing. And this is why I don't write for another website, and I write for my own website where I don't have to enforce deadlines. So I will try to get that up by Wednesday. I won't say at the latest because I don't want to make any promises I can't keep. But my goal right now is to get that up Wednesday. So some interesting questions that I did not get to on Friday's episode or Thursday's episode, whenever that was last week on the Q&A. So you definitely want to stay tuned to that on FalFans.com. So until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.